Our reading this morning is from the book whose title tells you what it's about. The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible by Charles Eisenstein. Where do we find the truth? We find it in the body, in the woods, in the water, in the soil. We find it in music, dance, and sometimes in poetry. We find it in a baby's face and in the adult's face behind the mask. We find it in each other's eyes when we look. Who are you? Are you a discreet and separate individual in a world of other? Or are you the totality of all relationships converging at a particular locus of attention? Get over the fantasy that you can answer this question by finding proof. No amount of evidence will be enough. You are just going to have to choose without proof. Who are you? The mystics have been offering us an answer for thousands of years. Two answers. On the one hand, strip away everything that connects you to the world. Your money, your relationships, your arms and legs, your language. And still, something that is you is left. I am not this, I am not that, something minus everything is nothing. Hence, the first answer, you are nothing. But when we go there, we find that nothing is not nothing. It is everything. All things spring from the void, and a speck of quantum vacuum has the energy of a billion suns. And so the second answer, you are everything. Take away even the tiniest relationship and you are diminished as well. Add one and you are increased. Change any being in this cosmos and you are altered as well. You are therefore everything. A web of relationship, each containing all. Charles asks us, who are you? And we tend to walk around with this idea that we are a separate individual among other separate individuals in a universe that is separate from us as well. So we're looking out from this flesh robot, Charles calls it. We're programmed by our genes to maximize reproductive self-interest. Right? Does this sound familiar to you? This is kind of common knowledge, isn't it? And so therefore human nature is to protect this separate individual from all those other competing individuals and those interpersonal forces in the universe. And so we're going to control things and protect this individual self. So we're going to look for ways to do that. We've got some strategies that we're taught, right? Money, status, information, power, these worldly things. And so where does that leave us? That leaves us in the situation where Reverend Tracy has to read a letter to let the immigrants who are coming and seeking asylum know that some of us see them as fellow human beings and not as threats to us. How is it that in the wealthiest country in the world, we can't afford to welcome these asylum seekers? It comes from this idea of, who are you? And if we decide that we are these separate individuals who must protect our isolated self-interest, then these are the kinds of conclusions that we come to. Are these the conclusions that we want? Is this the world that we dream is possible? I'm thinking not. As Unitarian Universalists, we explicitly affirm that this is not the world that we want. That we affirm a world that is connected, that is part of an interdependent web of which we are a part. Now, often that seventh principle about the interdependent web is translated to be more ecological and environmental. But from the very first time I heard that principle, I knew that it meant all of us, all of the beings, and all of the ecological world. We're all interconnected and affected by each other. And instead of believing that we are selfish, in some way sinful as our human nature, we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. So some UU theologians and others talk about the difference between an idea of original sin and an idea of original blessing, and focus on all of the wonders of what it is to be human. So who do we want to be given the world that we live in? The Reverend Dr. Walter Brueggemann explains the world that we live in by saying that we've been scripted, so that we've been influenced by the script that's come from our socialization and formation. And he calls the script the technological, therapeutic, consumer militarism. Let's unpack that a little bit. So, therapeutic is kind of this idea that there should be some way to cure everything, to counteract every ache, pain, discomfort, so that life could be lived without any inconvenience. Technological, that everything can be fixed and we can use our technological human ingenuity to fix it. There is nothing that cannot be solved. Consumerist, because the world is our oyster, right? We get to see everything out there and think of it as a consumer. What of that do I want? What's going to make things better for me? Even we come here to Woof and we often think of it as a consumer. What is working for me here and what is not working for me here? For me. Me, my individual inherent worth and dignity self. But we're not bad or wrong for doing this, that our script, our cultural script has taught us to behave like consumers. And then the militarism piece, that there is this idea that we must protect and maintain, guarantee safety for all of that therapeutic, technological consumerism that we want to be doing. Right? It's worth fighting for. It's worth killing for, is what we have come to believe. So we don't typically think of it so overtly and stand back from it and look at it so baldly, but I think he's right. I think that this is the typical script that we live in, and we kind of like that promise of security, immunity from all threats, and we can be safe and we can be happy, right? But is it working? Do you feel safe and happy? Not so much these days, right? Or even do people, have they felt safe for hundreds and thousands of years with these ideas that come from this sense of accumulation and the system that we often call patriarchy, which is not about men, but it's about this idea that we can dominate and control things. So we're not safe and we're not happy. In fact, because so much of this is false, we've got these new depths of insecurity. Depression is more widespread than ever. Addiction is more widespread than ever. It makes sense given the kind of bankruptcy of the script that we live in. And at the same time, we're well off, we're comfortable. By historical standards and by standards around the world, you know, things are pretty easy. But we as Unitarian Universalists, and the Reverend Dr. Brueggemann, speaking to the Christian church, says that it's the task of the church to detach us from that script. And he calls on biblical tradition to say that this, it has been this way for, you know, as long as the Hebrew Bible has been recording things, the stories of Moses having to convince the Israelites that no, it is not a good idea to go back to the Pharaoh and be slaves and work to deliver the number of bricks that they then promised to feed us and keep us safe. No, we want more than that. We want more than this. So what is possible? What is this world that we dream is possible? Well, Charles Eisenstein calls it a few things: the story of interbeing, the age of reunion, the ecological age, the world of the gift, as separate from a transactional exchange. Other words are the beloved community, the interdependent web. So what might this look like? So it goes to realizing that we are not these separate individuals, but that we are all interrelated, and neurobiologically we are all interrelated. Our physiological systems can tune into each other and be affected by each other. And you know this from walking into a room and going, "Ooh, what's going on here?" Your body feels it. Or walking into a room and going, "Oh, what's going on here?" So we are interconnected and affected by each other. So what we do to one to another, we do to ourselves. The Reverend Martin Luther King has told us that we are all part of an interwoven destiny. So every act is significant. And we are meant to join together fully and offer our gifts towards the well-being and development of the whole. We want to care about everyone. We want all the needs to matter. Nikki Kashtan is a key teacher of mine, and she is grounded in nonviolence and nonviolent communication. And she recognizes that so often when we hear about privilege, we don't feel privileged, right? And yet, we can kind of start to feel guilty about it. So I want to remind us that we didn't decide to be privileged. That we were born into a world with this script. And this script is teaching us, and this script existed way before we were born. And this script has sculpted us and limited how we can interact. And we can see, we can step back and see that script and decide that we want to do things differently. There are alternatives. Historically, people have lived differently. Still in tiny pockets around the world, people are living differently, where they live in some kind of circle of shared resources with a care for everyone's needs. So we don't have to feel helpless and hopeless. Even though we can't as individuals change this huge system and this huge script, so part of what we have to do is feel the sorrow and the grief that this is how the world is organized and arranged, and all the suffering that comes with that. So as North Americans, we're making choices that somehow result in so much of the global population living in extreme poverty. We don't think about that when we go to Fred Meyer and buy that cute shirt. because we've been told that consumerist, and that's the solution, right? To get that cute shirt, and then I'm going to feel better. And it worked for about, I don't know, 10 minutes, right? What is the actual cost? How can we start to grieve that rather than resist it? Because when we're in resistance, we're losing choice. And when we actually can sink into the feelings, then we can start to say, okay, from where I am, what can I do? Get rid of that blame, that shame, and then say, what am I going to do? What am I going to choose? Given what I was handed, given what I was born into, I do not have to follow that script. Yes, I've been given that script. Yes, I've been given a lot of good practice at following that script, but I actually get to choose. This is an improv. We get to improv our way through lives, so I don't have to follow that script. So we can look and notice what are the thoughts that we have. It's like there's a line that we have to get into to get the resources, and we were born and put ourselves somewhere in that line, right? And some of us are further ahead, and some of us are further behind, and we can think that, I'm further ahead, so therefore I must have worked harder and be more deserving than the people behind me in line, right? We don't think that out loud, but sometimes we say it to ourselves just a little bit. Or we can be like, oh, I'm so far ahead in line. Oh, my God, I'm embarrassed. I don't want to be one of those people. I belong with the people further back in line. So we can play it. We can get guilty and do it in all kinds of different ways. We can, like, want that status and that inclusion, or we can resist it and not want to be one of them. But whatever we're doing, we're ending up isolating ourselves, right? But how can we just notice these thoughts and be like, well, yeah, of course you feel that way. You've been trained to want to get ahead in that line. And you don't want to feel that it's undeserved. Or you feel the cost of being so far ahead in that line. And so, of course, you want to be further back where there's maybe more of a sense of community and solidarity. We can just notice how we're feeling with care. And then we can think, wait a minute, how do I want to think about things? What is this the script I really want to follow? Mickey tells a fairly simple story but it helped her wake up. So she was in her early 20s and she was visiting New York. She is an Israeli and was living in Israel at that point. But she was visiting New York. Now she's lived in America for many years. She met someone when she was in her 20s. It was probably 30 years ago. And this woman's daughter was wearing used clothes, which somehow, like, to Mickey was just like the epitome of embarrassment, of poverty. And she actually said to the girl's mother, well, why don't you get a better job so that you can buy your daughter new clothes? And the mother said, it's more important to me for my daughter to have a mother who's satisfied and fulfilled by her work than have new clothes. Like, hearing that kind of like rearranged Mickey's thinking. And this is an example of kind of seeing, I was caught in that script and I woke up to the script. So where are these moments where we can start to notice what we're defaulting into and think about, now wait a minute, what are the values that are really important to me? And what choice would I make if that was my guiding light rather than this default script? Part of that is being kind and tender to ourselves. And a piece of this is back to the neurology that I called on as a bit of proof that we are interrelated beings. So we have our right brain and our left brain. And our left brain is super important for getting things done, for being productive. It's like the instrumental part of our brain. It's where things are objective and solid. The script really encourages us to use the left part of our brain a lot, right? The right part of our brain is much more about connection and flow and resonance and big connections, not like one, two, three, but like one, two, three. So that right brain piece of us, how do we get to be there more often? Because we're kind of scripted into the left brain. So I'm actually going to invite us into a little bit of an experiment, thinking about what can we do with people who are within 3 feet or so. So you're within 3 feet or so of quite a few people right now. So I'm going to think about what we could do to break that script in conversation. And I'm going to give you an example before I ask you to do it. So let's imagine that someone at coffee hour comes to you and says, "Oh, sometimes I just feel so depressed about the state of the world. I can't connect to any sense of possibility at all. Possibility is this month's theme, and I must be a bad Unitarian Universalist." Okay, can you imagine someone saying that to you? Now go ahead and start to hear the response, the reaction that you're going to have and what you're going to say back. So it might be something like, "Oh, you're not a bad you. Oh my goodness, look at all the things that you do around here." So you're denying what she said and putting a positive spin on it. Your left brain is very good at that. It might be, "Oh, no, no, it's not that you're a bad you. It's all Trump's fault. Did you hear what he tweeted yesterday?" So blame. Our left brain is really good at blame. You might say, "Oh, well, have you thought about how you could work with Jack and Linda Smith and the migrant farm workers out in Hillsboro? Then you're going to feel better about making a difference." So offering a solution. Left brain thinking. Or, "Well, actually, you don't need to be depressed. The world is better now than it ever has been. I read in 1950, 75% of the world were living in poverty, but today it's less than 10%. There, don't you feel better?" Facts. The left brain loves facts. So what's the alternative? The right brain is about connecting, about feeling that interrelatedness and actually experiencing it and accompanying someone. So you might be silent when they say, "Oh, I feel so depressed. I'm a bad Unitarian Universalist." And just meet their gaze and be with them in that. You might say something about "I" and "you." Connect with them using the words "I" and "you." "I appreciate how much you care. I can relate to how you're feeling." You might offer up a metaphor. "Sometimes it feels like I carry such a heavy burden on my shoulders, I can barely stand up. How is it for you?" Now we're in right brain space. We're even just acknowledging what is so for them. Oh, are you wanting acknowledgement about how committed you are in your heart to Unitarian Universalism and our values, and wanting acknowledgement of how huge the gap is between what you see in the world and what you want in the world? You can just relax, just being acknowledged. Or give them some big dream. "Do you wish you could just scoop up all the people in the world and let them feel such big love and understanding that their defenses would melt away, and their eyes would open, and they'd look around and immediately start caring for each other, so the needs of everyone suddenly are going to matter and be attended to?" Can you feel in yourself the difference between these kind of connecting, relational, right brain responses and those more transactional, left brain responses? So I'm going to invite you to practice for just a little bit. The easiest thing is silence and looking into their eyes. Right? I think we can all do that. It's a little more challenging for some of us than others, like me. You can say, "I, you." Connect with them. "I, you. I appreciate what you're saying." You can acknowledge what they're saying. "Oh, Are you wanting acknowledgement for how, whatever they said? Or give them a big dream of what could be possible, what you're hearing in them. So I'm going to invite you to answer this question in just a moment. How are you feeling about the world you dream is possible? So I'm going to invite you to do this in pairs, just kind of for time's sake, so that each of you have time to talk for about 5 minutes. And so 2.5 minutes each. Okay, 5 minutes total, 2.5 minutes each. Lorraine is like, 5 minutes? And then when you finish those conversations, it would be a great time to find your spiral. So this is something that we're creating this month. And this is a spiral of what do you see that's possible in this moment. And at the end of the month, the whole spiral will be filled. So you could just write a couple of things towards the center of the spiral. Now, some of you are like, excellent, I'm going to write on the spiral right now and not talk to anyone who's within 3 feet of me. So that is an option. You're adults. You can choose as you wish. But I invite you to connect with someone within 3 feet of you, next to you, in front of you, behind you. Find that person, and your goal is to listen with resonance and connectedness to one of your answers and then switch back and forth. How are you feeling about the world you dream is possible? What is a sense of possibility you have right now? What seems possible in this moment? These spirals will build and grow throughout the month. So I am going to close with some of the same words that we opened with before we extinguish our chalice. We are all on a journey together. Look deep into yourself, into another. Be gentle and nurture. Listen as we experience and accept all that we really are. We grow in care. We begin to embrace others as ourselves and learn to live as one among many.
Thank you, Leslie.